Chapter 14. Two men are caught. Some days later, Mr. Brownlow got out of a carriage outside his house and went inside. Two more men got down from the carriage, with a third man between them, and hurried into the house. The third man was Monks.
"This is a nice way for my father's oldest friend to behave to me," complained Monks when the other two men had left Mr. Brownlow alone with him.
"Because I was your father's oldest friend, I will be gentle with you," replied Mr. Brownlow.
"What do you want from me?" said Monks.
"You have a brother," said Mr. Brownlow.
"I have no brother," replied Monks. "You know that I was an only child. Why do you talk to me of brothers?"
"I know that your unhappy father was ordered to marry a woman 10 years older, whom he did not love, and you were their only child. After years of unhappiness, your parents went their separate ways. Your mother went abroad and soon forgot her husband. Your father found new friends, including a man whose wife had died. This man had two daughters, one a beautiful young woman of 19, the other a child of 2 or 3. Your father fell in love with the eldest daughter and promised to marry her."
Monks had begun to bite his lip, his eyes fixed on the floor.
"Then your father had to go to Rome," Mr. Brownlow continued, "where a relative had died, leaving your father a large sum of money. But in Rome, your father himself became ill and died, and his will could not be found. Everything he had went to you and your mother. Before he went to Rome, your father came to visit me. He left with me a picture, a portrait he had painted himself, of the girl he loved, who was expecting a baby. He was anxious about her and told me of his plan to sell everything he had and to live with her abroad after he returned from Rome. He promised to write, but I never heard from him or saw him again. After I heard of his death, I tried to find the woman he loved, but I could not. Then, years later, your brother, a poor, weak child, came into my life by chance, and I saved him from a life of crime."
"What?" cried Monks.
"When the boy lay in my house and we nursed him from sickness," Mr. Brownlow went on, "I saw at once how much he looked like the woman in the portrait. I need not tell you how he was then taken away from me before I learned anything about him. You know all that. I lost the boy and couldn't find him. I heard that your mother was dead, so I knew that only you could solve the mystery. I heard you were in the West Indies, so I travelled there to find you, but you had already left some months before. I returned to London, still searching for you. I walked the streets day and night looking for you, but I couldn't find you until 2 hours ago."
"Well, you found me. Now what? You don't know for certain that the miserable woman my father loved had a child. You've just imagined that she and the boy look alike," said Monks.
"I do know," said Mr. Brownlow. "In the last 2 weeks, I've learned it all. You have a brother, and you know it. Now I know that your father made a will that left money to the child. Your mother burned it. Without this will, you got everything. I know that you've been getting rid of the proof of who the child is." The only proof of who the boy is now lies at the bottom of the river, you told Fagin.
No, 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 cried Monks.
You're lying, said Mr. Brownlow. You've been meeting with robbers and murderers, and a woman has been murdered because of you. You're guilty of her murder, even if you didn't kill her yourself.
I knew nothing about that. What do you want of me? Said Monks.
You must give an innocent child what is his, replied Mr. Brownlow.
In the roughest and dirtiest part of London, where the River Thames itself runs black, there lies one of the strangest places in the city, Jacob's Island. The buildings are roofless and their walls are falling down. The windows have gone, the doors hang into the street, and the smokeless chimneys are black. In an upstairs room of one of these houses, one of the few buildings with a door, Toby Crackit was hiding with another robber.
When was Fagin caught?
Crackit asked the other.
At 2 o'clock this afternoon, replied the robber. Charlie hid, but Noah was taken too, and he will tell the police about Fagin.
So what happened to Charlie? Crackit asked.
He was waiting till dark, but he'll be here soon.
As the men were talking, the sound of light footsteps could be heard, and Sykes's dog ran into the room. The men jumped up and looked down at the street below, but there was no sign of Sykes.
What does this mean? Cried Crackit. He can't be coming here. I hope he doesn't.
He could not call the murderer by his name. It grew dark. The men spoke little, and it was in whispers. The dog hid under a chair and went to sleep. Suddenly, there was knocking at the door below.
Is that Charlie Bates?
Said Crackit, shaking all over. He went to the window and looked down. He knew at once who it was. The dog knew too and was waiting by the door.
We have to let him in, said Crackit,
and he went down to unlock the door. He returned with a man, his face half covered in a handkerchief and his hat pulled down over his eyes. He took off his hat and the handkerchief and he sat down. Pale face, dark ringed eyes, thin cheeks. It looked like the ghost of Sykes. He sat in silence for a long time.
How did the dog get here?
He said at last.
It came alone 3 hours ago, said Crackit.
The paper says that Fagin's caught. Is it true?
Said Sykes.
It's true. He will be hanged.
They were silent again.
Damn you both! Have you nothing to say to me? Are you going to turn me in or let me hide here till the search is over? Asked Sykes.
You may stay here if you think it's safe,
said Crackit. There was knocking again at the door downstairs, and Crackit went down. He soon returned with Charlie Bates.
Are you here, you monster?
Cried Charlie when he saw Sykes.
I'm not afraid of you. If the police come here, I'll turn you in. I don't care if you try to kill me. Murder! Help! Help!
Charlie threw himself at Sykes so suddenly that he managed to knock the strong man down. The boy and the man fell on the ground together, Sykes beating Charlie with both hands, the boy pulling tight on Sykes's clothes. Crackit and the other man sat and watched, saying nothing. The fight was too unequal to last long. Sykes had Charlie down, his knee on the boy's throat, when Crackit pulled him off.
Look!
Crackit said, pointing at the window. There were lights and loud voices outside, and the sound of hurrying footsteps crossing the nearest wooden bridge. Then came a loud knocking at the door, and shouts from an angry crowd below. Charlie shouted, "Help! Help!" with all his strength.
"He's here! Break down the door!"
Sykes took hold of Charlie and dragged him across the floor as easily as if he were an empty sack.
"Quick, open the door to this room," Sykes shouted to Crackit.
Crackit didn't move, but the key was in the lock. Sykes threw Charlie into the room and turned the key.
"Is the downstairs door locked?"
Sykes shouted again to Crackit.
"Double locked,"
replied Crackit, still without moving.
"And made of iron."
"Do your worst,"
Sykes shouted out of the window to the crowd below.
"I'll get away from you."
"Someone bring a ladder,"
a voice outside shouted.
"Give me a rope, a long rope,"
Sykes cried to Crackit.
"They're all at the front, so I can climb down the back and escape that way. Get me a rope, or I'll kill you and then myself."
The terrified Crackit pointed to where the rope was kept. Sykes chose the longest piece and hurried upstairs. There was a small window in the room where Charlie was locked up.
"Watch the back!"
Charlie shouted through this window to the crowd below. So when the murderer stepped through a door onto the roof, the shout went up that he was there, and the crowd poured round to the back. Sykes looked down. There was a ditch below, but there was no water in the ditch, only mud.
"They have him now,"
cried a man on the nearest bridge.
"The front door has been opened at last," cried another man.
The crowd poured towards the front again, wanting to see the murderer brought out. Sykes was not giving up. He tied one end of the rope around the chimney and made a strong circle of rope at the other end to put over his shoulders. He could climb down towards the ditch and escape. He had his knife ready in his hand to cut the rope, drop to the ground, and run away. As Sykes put the circle of rope over his head, before pushing it down to his chest, he suddenly looked around and threw his arms above his head.
"I see Nancy's eyes again," he screamed.
He began to fall, unable to balance. The circle of rope tightened quickly around his neck as he dropped towards the ground. He hung lifeless against the wall, his knife still in his hand. Suddenly, a white dog, which was hiding until now, ran backwards and forwards on the roof with a miserable howl. It jumped towards the dead man's shoulders, but missed, and fell into the ditch, hitting its head on a rock.